Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, text 46. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chanda Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, Satama Vatsari Advaita Thari Bhakta Gan, Sabore Dok The first year after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order of life, all the devotees headed by Sri Advaita Prabhu went to see the Lord at Jagannath Puri. Om Jnana Timarandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurunmulatam yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam yena Bhutale Shayam Rupakatamayam Sadati Sapadantikam Adadanastanam Dante Idam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Dulisham Janma Janmani Varagya Yug Bhakti Visham Piyatnai Apayam Mam Manadip Shamantam Tatam Buhiya Paradhuta Suki Sanatanistam Prabhumastriyami Pancha Kalpa Thirubhyascha Kripa Shindhu Payevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasade Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare. So, greetings from Manhattan, New York City. I'm staying in the Brahmacharya Ashram of 26 Second Avenue, which is located at 26 First Avenue. Wonderful ashram, led by a very wonderful and fixed up devotee named Yajna Purush Prabhu. And it's really the way our ashram should be, with very, very first class brahmacharis, very satisfied and happy in their renunciation. Okay, we have some problems. Maybe there's some new people that don't know to mute your phones and make sure that you have fairly good reception if you're using cell phones. Otherwise, it could affect everyone's reception. So, it's very nice, as Prabhupada said, that a renunciate should be happy in their renunciation. I can honestly say that the devotees here are in a very sweet mood and very happy in their renunciation, and very, very wonderful program. I guess I'm inspired to speak about it. You know, the devotees have the full morning program and have some time to themselves, and every day they have class between 12:30 and 2. And they take lunch, and then they go for their preaching. One of the brahmacharis, Gadadhar, his preaching has been so nice that he's actually officially the Krishna chaplain at Columbia University with his own office, and I did a retreat with them last Sunday. So, and then he has a nice assistant, and then Radha Vallabha. He does a program at NYU. And they also now started a daily dinner program at 22nd Avenue, which the students pay for between 5 and 6:30. So 2nd Avenue is filled with young, intelligent people taking prasadam from 5 to 6:30 practically every day. And I stopped by there, so I'm very fortunate. And as Prabhupada said in one letter I saw, I remember one year when I got what's called a quit India notice from the foreign registration officer in India. Luckily, I was able to get back, but it shook me up, and I went to Prabhupada's room, and I had his desk, and I would pray, and the letters would be there. Maybe I told the devotees this, but somehow it's coming to my heart, so I should say. I asked Prabhupada, and I read the letter, and I would say, what is Prabhupada going to instruct me? And I read the letter, and it was, I think it was I forgot which devotee's letter, but Prabhupada said, New York is favored by me because I started the movement there. I wish all New Yorkers that Krishna consciously advance. So there's some blessing here for Prabhupada, and hopefully the preaching will bear its fruits. But certainly, if the Sankirtan movement, if we see in the Chaitanya Bhagavad how the Sankirtan movement began, it began in Srivasangam, when the devotees who were very intimate and in relationship joined together very intensely to share Krishna consciousness. Harinam Sankirtan. And by the force of that the intensity of their kirtan, the like-minded devotees doing kirtan, by that force of kirtan, then eventually it could not be contained in the walls of Srivasangam, and Lord Chaitanya made an arrangement with as the Chankazi came and broke the Madanga to take it into the street. So, but it was the force of that intimate kirtan. So I'm very confident here, the force of the intimate kirtan. And that actually, that's what the Krishna consciousness movement means. The Krishna consciousness movement means is devotees are united because they're wonderfully sharing the experience of Krishna's mercy. Just like in the Kaliya pastime, when the cowherd boys, they went to the bank of the Jamuna because it was so scorching hot, and they ran ahead of Krishna, and they drank somehow in their great thirst. They drank the poisonous water, and they all were dropped nearly dead. And then somehow or other, Krishna, by his loving glance, revived them all. And they woke up from this near death, and they saw that they were actually saved by Krishna. And each one was experiencing Krishna's mercy. So they all shared the experience of Krishna's mercy as Krishna saved them. So the Krishna consciousness movement, as I was explaining, is that feeling of deep gratitude and humility, and therefore experiencing the mercy of Prabhupada and Krishna. And that's what we should share. That's what should bring us together in unity. And from that feeling of Vaishnava relationships, each one feeling humble and experiencing the Anugraha mercy of Prabhupada and Krishna, unite together in compassion to share that feeling of Krishna consciousness. Compassion is also based on our own experience. Because if we actually relish Krishna consciousness, then we will feel for those who don't have it. And if our heart has been opened by Krishna consciousness, it will naturally be opened up in feeling to those who are bereft of it, and we will feel strongly how much they are missing. And of course, the open heart in giving Krishna consciousness to others Also, when that open heart is reflected to the deity, the devotees, and the holy name, it easily absorbs the nectar of Krishna consciousness. So I'm just, as I do in this Sangha, I try to, as I did in Vrindavan, I try to share perhaps the flavor of the particular place. Now, I started answering questions in the Sangha. That was a suggestion by Piyari Mohan. And, we did have some nice discussions, and I carried on last Sunday this discussion that was brought up, about how to reconcile the humble feelings of anonymity of the devotee and the personalism of Krishna consciousness, the individuality of the devotee, and how to these two feelings go side by side, and the reconciliation of those two points was if the devotee is in a humble mood, his talents will be used in kirtan. The talents will be used not for the false ego. And generally, we take our talents and our individual, we take things as for our false ego to increase our Purusha Bhav, to have some attributes to stand out and control others. But in the mood of more humble than a blade of grass, one takes those talents in the mood of service, and specifically when he does kirtan, in service of the kirtan, not in service of his ego. And one person wrote, and I'm getting very wonderful letters, there's one nice devotee named Sue Davy, and she calls in from Belgium, and she's a disciple of Radhanath Swami, she wrote me a story that she heard from Radhanath Swami that reconciled this point very, very nicely. I don't know if I'll tell the whole story, but it was, anyway, I will tell the whole story. It's right. There was a disciple of Ramanujacharya named Ananta Acharya. And he was actually a Siksha disciple, but he was initiated by a Parasabhat. And he came to Ramanuja, and he asked her, he said, "Oh, dear Ramanuja Acharya, please, you tell me, what is the symptoms of a Vaishnava?" And Ramanuja Acharya didn't respond. He just said, "Here, you do this service." And he did that service very, 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 very humbly. And then when he came back to Ramanujacharya after doing that service, I forget it was 6 weeks or 6 months, then Ramanujacharya said, "Okay, I'll answer your question." He said, "The symptom of a Vaishnava is that he's like a crane, he's like a rooster, he's like a salt, he's like salt, and he's like you." So he couldn't figure this out. So he went to his initiating guru, and he told Parasabhat, because his initiating guru is also revering, because this is Ramanujacharya. So he came back to his initiating spiritual master, and they were both the Siksha disciples of Ramanujacharya. So he said, "What does this mean?" And his guru is very intelligent. He said, "Well, okay, a crane, aha. Why is a Vaishnava like a crane? Because it's pure white in color. And that represents a Vaishnava is without duplicity. He has no ulterior motive. Aha! And a crane stands on one leg and he looks in the water and he doesn't consider the small fish. He's only waiting for the big fish. So, the Vaishnava, he's not interested in the small talk. He's looking for the talk of wisdom, the big talk of the saints. And also a crane. He leaves a place that is flooded. So similarly, the Vaishnava leaves the place that's flooded by Pajalpa, and material conversation. Ah! And he says, he's also like a rooster. How? Because a rooster, he goes to the dustbin and he picks out the seeds that are actually its suitable food. Aha! And a Vaishnava, he's like, he's saragrahi, he looks for the essence. And therefore, in all opportunities, in all situations, the Vaishnava is looking for opportunities to serve. And he's like salt. And how is a Vaishnava like salt? This Parasabhat, he was so discriminating. Ah, he said, because salt brings out the flavor, but it remains hidden. When we say it's a good preparation, we usually say, oh, what wonderful coriander seeds. Oh, the rice was cooked so finely. We point out some spice but the salt, although it remains hidden, it is the salt that brings out the flavor. So he said, yes, and a devotee, he performs all kinds of varieties of wonderful service, even great things he does, but he tries to remain hidden. And the flavor, to give flavor, the salt is willing to melt, to give up its own identity. In the same way, a devotee is willing to sacrifice everything to give pleasure to Krishna. But even though it melts and merges, it remains distinct. So similarly, that's the reconciliation, that humbler than a blade of grass means what melts is your ego. What melts is your ego, but your talents remain distinct, just like salt. It melts, but its talents remain distinct. So thank you, Sudevi, for relating that for me. And how is a Vaishnava like you? He said, because you are obedient to your guru and you sacrifice for others. So I'm really appreciating the Sangha because I'm getting such nice feedback on that. Now, I said in the last class, which I gave Wednesday, I have a habit of these long introductions, and I want to really read and share the text with everyone because it's so wonderful. But so we're up to the point now where Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he's finished his Mangalacharanam, this wonderful expression, because he wants to speak on the Antashesha Leela, the end pastimes, the esoteric end pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How esoteric are those pastimes? That after Krishna performed the Ras Leela and enjoyed the highest flavor of pleasure, which is his own internal energy, heightened to the maximum degree called rasa, after experiencing such intense pleasure, still, three desires were unfulfilled. That's inconceivable. And the three desires that were unfulfilled is that he wanted to experience the love that his devotees experienced for him. He wanted to taste his own beauty that the devotees were tasting by perceiving and exchanging with Krishna, with him, and he wanted to experience the happiness the devotees feel when they receive his love. So how esoteric that the Sesha Leela, ending in the Antya Leela, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanting to experience Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanting to experience, or Krishna wanting to experience these unfulfilled desires. So he has to explain this, and as I mentioned, this Mangalacharan, and the last thing we were explaining, how the symptom of bhakti and humility is expressed in a variety of flavors, which we ourselves may try to access and execute, like compassion or gratitude. And I was making the point, you know, because what he did, because I finished this section, is that because he was glorifying all the devotees, then he was glorifying the Supreme Lord, all the devotees, then glorifying the devotees who spread Krishna consciousness, and then specifically glorifying the contributions of those devotees who have produced innumerable transcendental literatures to establish Sad-Dharma, or the right path of action. And he went over, Krishnadas Kaviraj, the indebtedness we have for the books that were presented in Krishna consciousness. The indebtedness we have. And he went over one by one the wonderful books of especially Srila Sanatan Goswami, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Hari Bhakti Vilas, Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When we hear this ourselves, our hearts should melt with gratitude to the previous acharyas and to Srila Prabhupada, who translated them to us because we had no access to them in the original language, and we had no access to them even in the translation of the original language without his purports and commentaries that took into account our limited frame of reference to understand the culture, philosophy, and tradition of India. So it's an ecstasy. Who can count the books, he says, by Rupa Goswami, and he described the pastimes, and then he finally gets on to Jiva Goswami, who composed the Bhakti, the Sat-Sandarbhas, Bhagavat Sandarbhas, who gave the conclusions, the limit of the conclusions of devotional service. I'm certainly studying Bhakti Sandarbha now, and I am completely indebted in gratitude to Srila Jiva Goswami for these works. And I said I try to every morning bring him into my consciousness and meditate at Radha Damodar, his samadhi, just hopefully a drop of his devotional insight can come into my heart. And then he said the magnus opus, the most famous and the most formal, the Gopal Champu he presented, which is Champu means combination of prose and poetry, and where he establishes the transcendental mellows enjoyed in Vrindavan and all the pastimes are described in detail. And one other point before we go to the text and try to cover some of the text is this gratitude, if we understand it, it's a symptom of humility, and without it, we cannot experience love from Krishna. And without experiencing that mercy and love for Krishna, there's little chance that we'll actually love Krishna. How important is this gratitude? And I'll give you an example. A child who is spoiled, he gets so much from his parents, but because he has no gratitude, he doesn't love them. So we should not be like a spoiled child. We're getting so much for Krishna, but we have so many demands. And therefore, even though Krishna's mercy is coming in so many ways that it's given us through our lives, the jewels of realization. I doubt that anyone listening to this phone call would like to be where they were 25 years or 30 years or 10 years ago before they got the jewels of realizations of Krishna consciousness, which may even came through trials and tribulations arranged by Krishna indirectly through our karma, or by his mercy. So we should not be like this spoiled child, but we should always have gratitude, and to cultivate that form of humility, we should also express gratitude, because the expression of emotion will engender that emotion if our desire is to have it. So this is so important, this gratitude. So now we'll go to the text for today. So it begins the first year after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order. All the devotees, headed by Advaita Prabhu, went to see the Lord at Jagannath Puri. So this is so nice. Pilgrimage. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Shonaka Rishi is trying to inspire Sutta Goswami to continue speaking the Bhagavatam. He thinks he may end, and he begins to glorify devotional service, explaining how all the senses are useless if not used in Krishna's service. Not even useless, detrimental. The eyes if they don't look at the form of the Lord, they're like the eyes on a peacock, they can't see. They have no function. And he finally goes on, he says, the legs, which do not go to the temple of the Lord or go on pilgrimage, are like the legs on a tree trunk, which means they have no value or mobility. So this pilgrimage, so Lord Chaitanya, he left and he took sannyas, and the devotees were in separation. And the first year after Lord Chaitanya accepted sannyas, in other words, the 24 years, he lived 48 years, 24 years, and then after he took sannyas, begins his Seshalila, and he first goes to Puri, it says. The first year after he accepted, he goes to Puri. And all the devotees, headed by Sri Advaita, went to see the Lord at Jagannath Puri. They went on pilgrimage. They went on that mood because, you know, the most classic example of pilgrimage, and I'm thinking I'll lecture on this when I get to Vrindavan, is Akura, when he's coming to Vrindavan and he's meditating, today I will see my Lord. So that's the mood of pilgrimage. That's the mood of going to the temple. Today I will see my Lord. Today I will be fortunate. And again, the devotees are going together and they're all sharing this extreme feeling of mercy, which is bonding them together in Krishna consciousness. And they're going to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Jagannath. Rati yata deki tahan rahila charimas Prabhu sangye nitya gita parama ulas. After attending the Rati yatra ceremony at Jagannath Puri, all the devotees remained there for 4 months, greatly enjoying the company of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by performing kirtan, chanting and dancing. Nitya Gita Parama Ulas. Ulas means the greatest pleasure. The kirtan is the greatest pleasure. Why? Because the greatest pleasure is prema. And what is prema? Prema is the devotees and the Supreme Lord and their exchange of love. So he described how Gaur Lila parallels Krishna Lila, and how in Srivas Angam, it was the Srivas Angam where the Sankirtan movement began, is Rasa Stali. And how is it Rasa Stali? Because the Kirtan is Krishna, and the devotees are there in their mood of Gopi Bhav for Krishna. So what is the difference? The form is different, but actually the internal mood is exactly the same. So this Sankirtan is Parama Ulas. It's the greatest pleasure. And this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, Sankirtan, which means congregational chanting of all these. And I think we've all experienced this. Even if we're not at an advanced stage of sense control, but I remember times, and unfortunately I haven't done it enough, going out on Harinam Sankirtan in New York City with devotees and attaining a stage of absorption. And therefore, a stage of tremendous bliss and pleasure. So this is actually the method. And this Sankirtan I got this one book. It's very interesting. It's called The Nectar of the Holy Name. Someone gave it to me as a gift. And it's an English translation of this contemporary Vaishnava who lived in Vrindavan. And within the book were praises for him, his work, by all the greatest scholars in Vrindavan. And funny, when I read the list of scholars, I was again had the fortune of being with my godbrother Pradyumna Prabhu, who was telling me, you know, at the time he was in Vrindavan, who are considered the greatest scholars. And I saw the list of those people who he said were the greatest scholars were listed there. And in this book, The Nectar of the Holy Name, the person specifically presents that Lord Chaitanya came to give Sankirtan, and that by Sankirtan, chanting with instruments congregationally together, that will reveal one's eternal relationship with Krishna. He said that was Lord Chaitanya's mission. Although there are many processes, and they can all elevate us, but it's Sankirtan specifically, which is the Yajnai Sankirtanapraya Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. So can you imagine the devotees enjoying the company of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by performing kirtan chanting? This should be our meditation. I sometimes chant Hare Krishna, and I imagine that the Hare Krishna I am chanting is me responding in kirtan at Srivas Angam, or the Rathayatra here, ceremony in Jagannath Puri. We should pray to join the kirtan. And as Narottam Das Thakur says, that one who dives deep into the Sankirtan mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu alights on the shore of Radha and Krishna. Vidayasa Maya Prabhu Kahila Sabare Pratyabda Asibe Shabe Gundicha Deki Bare. At the time of departure, the Lord requested all the devotees, please come here every year to see the Rathayatra festival of Lord Jagannath's journey to the Gundicha temple. So it's, he said, please come, you please see, to see how merciful the Supreme Lord is. He's inviting us to the Holy Dham. He's inviting us to the Kirtan. He wants the devotees to be pleased, because the devotees love Krishna, which means they have that bhav that Krishna should be pleased, and Krishna as the Supreme Person, he loves those devotees, and therefore he wants them pleased, and therefore he requests them to join the Sankirtan, and every year you come, every year. Such a nice principle of yatra. I know in the Chaupati temple, the devotees, they have yatra every year. Every year. Just recently, I met with the devotees in New Jersey, some of the devotees, and they want to plan. I think it's nice, every congregation, they want to plan a nice yatra, a camping out 2 days, ending with a boat festival, and recreate the camping ground into a Vrindavan parikram. And they're very enthusiastic, to make some kind of, they want me to participate. The different campgrounds can represent the different places of Krishna's pastimes. And even the children easily can participate, because they can dress up as cowherd boys and gopis, and each place can be a different, and I'll go and I'll take a parikram. So we can do that in any place that we are. We can have a yatra, a pilgrimage, something centered on Vrindavan. And actually the it's non-different. And where there's intense, the Vrindavan means the internal potency. But the Vrindavan in India means the internal potency is manifested independent of our effort. But if we manifest the internal potency by the process of chanting and hearing, then what is the difference between that and Vrindavan, because it's also the internal potency. We will be absorbed in the holy name. So it's nice to have these kind of functions where devotees get together and they can participate and recreate Vrindavan. So it's so nice. Come here. See the Rath Yatra festival. Prabhur Ogyai Bhakti Gan Pratyabda Ashiya Kundichya Dekya Yana Kabura Malia. Following the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the devotees used to visit Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu every year. What an order! Such a one, you know, the order, what is his order? You come and join with me. They would see the Gundicha festival at Jagannath Puri and then return home after 4 months. It seems that that was kind of that agrarian economy was very nice, because when it wasn't the harvest season, then everyone could be off for 4 months, that type of culture. You could see that in India in one sense, how that culture. Jayadvaita Swami used to say that the devotees, and we talk about Dvan Ashram, but that when you used to travel on the Padyatra and you'd go to these villages, you saw that type of system was already established. And Bhakti Gaurava Narayan Maharaj, who's a sannyas disciple of Shivram Swami and a disciple of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He took sannyas after Tamal Krishna Maharaj left. And he's very nice. He's was the president at our Govardhan place, and he joined in Vrindavan in 1980. He was actually a professor in Puri University, and he used to teach Chandigas and Vidyapati and Jayadev Goswami, and it was all about Krishna, Vrindavan. So one day, he wasn't married. He just left everything. His parents didn't know where he went. They didn't see him for 15 years, and he just went to Vrindavan. What a samskar. And he just went to Vrindavan. And somehow or other, he met the ISKCON devotees, and he came, and he preached for so many years. But he told me that in the village he grew up in, Puri, he said everything was provided within that village. You know, the people were healthy. They were home remedies. He said every evening you can hear the Ramkatha or the Mahabharat by some pandit in the thing. And he said every people wouldn't have to leave the village. Interesting. Tejas Prabhu, who's a godbrother of mine, who's a genius. And he's studying the economic system of Vrindavan Ashram, but also modern economics. He described how many problems are solved by location. If people can just grow up in a community, how many problems are solved by just growing up in a community which you will live for the rest of your life, which is the opulence people had for thousands and thousands of years. He gave me an economic calculation that you know, in 15 or 20 years, the amount of money that will be spent on health care for the elderly is enough to crush the U.S. economy. But he described how that whole problem is solved in a proper village setting where people took care of people. You know, and they didn't have to spend that money. They had an inherent system on how to do it, and people responded in that way. Just location, how many mental and energy is spent on moving, on trying to find the community where the people have the opulence of being born into a community. So very, very nice. So they had a culture and a life where they could have 4 months to go on pilgrimage. Vimshati vatsara achi kaila gati gati anyonye dunhara dunha vina nahi stiti. For 20 consecutive years this meeting took place, and the situation became so intense that the Lord and the devotees could not be happy without meeting one another. Why could they not be happy without meeting one another? Because they loved each other, and love is pleasure, and love is the attraction between two beings in relationship. So two beings who love each other want to be together, to experience that love. Of course, the love is also experienced in separation. But love requires two embankments, as my godbrother Srila Gaurgobinda Swami said. It requires, like a river requires two embankments, prema, to flow forcefully. The river of prema to flow forcefully requires the embankment of union and the embankment of separation. So it became so intense that the devotees could not be happy without mutually coming together and meeting, because they had so much mutual affection and reciprocation and loving spiritual relationships based on Krishna Katha and Kirtan and exchanging love, Bhunte Bhojyate Chaiva, that they could not be happy without meeting others. That was their shelter. Shelter means where your needs are satisfied. Your greatest need is to have satisfaction of heart. Satisfaction of heart requires love, and love requires the proper object of love, which is Krishna, and Krishna's devotees. Because that relationship is real, it's eternal, and it could properly reciprocate the love. So they could not be happy without meeting one another. So we're seeing, this is the Gaur Lila, so nice. Sesha ara ye rahi vadasa vatsara krishnera viraha lila prabhura antara. The last 12 years was simply devoted to relishing the pastimes of Krishna in separation within the heart of the Lord. So it's going on to another subject now. The last 12 years was simply devoted to... So we discussed it because Krishnadas Kaviraj, he gave such a nice synopsis that he described the Sesha Lila had these 6 years traveling and preaching and these 18 years in Puri, and I believe the first 6 years were more or less associating more with the devotees, and the last 12 years, well, he's still associated with devotees, but it was simply devoted to relishing the pastimes of Krishna in separation within the heart. Why in separation? Because what are the three unfilled desires of Krishna? It's to relish the love of that the devotee is experiencing, and the happiness of seeing him, and the happiness he feels from Krishna's love. So he wants to experience the love of his devotee. Which devotee? Srimati Radharani. When? At the height of her pleasure, the height of her love, which is the moments of separation. So we'll see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this Antya Lila, it's Krishna trying to experience this love of his devotee at the height of their love, and therefore he's meditating on, if you check the Antya Lila, what are the pastimes? It's when Radharani meets Krishna at Kurukshetra, union and separation. It's the Rasa dance where Krishna leaves the Rasa dance. It's the mood of separation. It's the pastime when Akura comes to take the gopis from Vrindavan. It's the mood of separation. And Gaur Govinda Swami, in his brilliant analysis of Gaur Lila, he's really an acharya for Gaur Lila, being even from a Brahmin family in Ariya and growing up in that culture. So he made the point that there are actually three types of separation. Bhuti, Bhavan, and I forgot the names. One separation, I explained this before, is that Krishna is leaving. They knew that now they heard Krishna is going. He hadn't gone yet, but he was in the process of going. And then when they saw that chariot leaving and just moving out, that was another type of separation, and then Krishna left. But the separation that was most intense is when the chariot was actually going. So he not only was trying to relish the separation, that the gopis would feel it, but the height of their separation. And that was in the Gambhira. And Sri Prabhupada's purport, we can share his words that he gave us. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enjoyed the position of gopis in separation from Krishna. This is Prabhupada talking to us. When Krishna left the gopis and went to Mathura, the gopis cried for him the rest of their lives, feeling intense separation from him. This ecstatic feeling of separation was specifically advocated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through his actual demonstrations. And for us to enter into the mood of the gopis, our aspiration, this is a very practical method of bhajan. Why is it a practical method of bhajan? Because we are separated from Krishna. And therefore, it's very relevant for us, because if we're to have any love for Krishna, that love is going to have to be cultivated by our separation. Because we are not with Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he demonstrated that for us. And therefore, Prabhupada also, in his bhajan siksha, his instructions for our chanting, he so nicely said that one should chant the Hare Krishna mantra like a child who is crying for his mother. And therefore, Gaur Govinda Swami, who had so much deep realization, talked about, you know, he wanted to establish at his temple a crying school. Because this is our bhajan. This is our practice. We have to somehow get some preliminary attraction for Krishna so that we miss him and we want that. And we're hankering to that. And that will be the expression of bhakti. That will be the expression of humility in our heart. That we can actually take shelter of, where we don't have experience of union with Krishna. And one more verse. Actually, I'm going to stop now. Next verse, it really gets wonderful now. Now, I'm finally happy that we're reading through the CC together, and we're going to see now the attitude of separation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appears mad both day and night. He's in samadhi. He's laughing, crying, dancing, chanting in great sorrow. And that then he would visit the deities, and his feelings corresponded exactly to the gopis when they saw Krishna at Kurukshetra after long separation. So we'll continue. Now, anybody would like to ask maybe one or two questions? Anybody have a question or want to say something? Okay, we don't have to have questions, but if someone ever does at the end of class, I will leave that open.